Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of India's a Truth. And back with us is Larry Johnson, and our shirts do not match at the least.
Yeah, I'm upset about that, but hey, we'll get over it.
I'm the sunshine or the sunset to that jungle.
Yeah, I got my camo. Put me out in the jungle. Yeah, you can't see me.
It's pretty good camo. This is definitely pretty good camo.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. Send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That'd be a good round number for the summer. So let me know. Leave some comments and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.
Right then. Where does one relocate properly? Desert? 40 degrees? No water? Forests? Rivers? Four seasons? Desert? 40 degrees? No water? Forests? Rivers? Four seasons?
It's actually much simpler than most people think.
Good Lord, that's less paperwork than a gym membership.
As a British man, I chose the place where I can still complain about the weather properly.
All right, let's head that way. Sounds good, I'm ready.
Move to Russia. Start a new life. It's easier with Moscow Connect. Website for details, moscowconnect.ru.
Well, Larry, you had a chance to listen to, it's only about 10 minutes. But very intelligent and great conversation between the esteemed Senator Kennedy of Louisiana, who actually learned how to read and write enough to become a senator, and the esteemed General Eric Smith, otherwise known as Commandant of the Marine Corps, or my nose is so far up your senator's ass, I can't breathe. Yeah. What did you think of that one? If you haven't listened to that, go out on YouTube and watch the video.
It was painful. General Smith just refused to tell any truth and let Kennedy spend the Ukrainian propaganda. And that, you know, that, boy, Russia's losing and Ukraine's winning and Ukraine's on the verge of a knockout blow. And it's just complete delusional nonsense.
The 40% drop in Russian oil exports, according to Kennedy. I'm not sure where the hell he's getting that from, but, you know.
Ignoring the fact that Russia's making more than almost three times the amount of money it was previously. Actually, probably four times as much money off the sale of oil. So, you know, the little facts like that don't disturb Kennedy. I mean, I've always liked Kennedy as far as, you know, he had sort of this folksy, you know, comes across as his country lawyer, and he's much smarter and shrewder than that. But it's an act, and he gets away with it. But on foreign, he ought to stick to domestic politics. He's much better at that than he is foreign politics.
Wasn't it Kennedy who back, I think, in 23 said that Ukraine with America's aid was going to turn Russia into fish meat?
It sounds like something he would say. Yeah. So can't rule that out. But, you know, it's just, again, he's representative of the general attitude that's in the United States. And that's why particularly given Lavrov's conversation with Marco Rubio, 99% of Americans don't appreciate what's coming down the pike now.
Nope. Well, there's also that moment in the second part where Kennedy starts talking about Xi and how Xi is really afraid of America and is afraid of a war with Taiwan and how they're just going to kick his teeth in. This is 4 days old. This is with what just happened in Iran. And this man is talking up going to war with China.
Yeah. No, I know. It's, I don't know if the failure of the intelligence community to properly brief these people, or if they've been properly briefed and they just don't believe it. But the United States does not have the military force capable of confronting China, much less defeating China. So how, you know, how are we supposed to deliver our force? I guess we'd have to put a boatload of planes in Japan and Okinawa. And then even from there, the distance to China, I think, is still in excess of 500 miles. So an F-35, that's its maximum range.
Yep.
So you're going to have to put air refuelers up over China, which means, I think the Chinese have something called an air defense, I think.
Better than a Patriot.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The odds I get, there's the United States has no effective way to project force into China and to sustain any kind of operation. We've got enough to piss them off. And then once they start firing back, boy, we're going to be on our back foot. So yeah. it's just a reminder of how inadequate the U.S. military capability is now, because ground force, they're irrelevant, unless they've recruited all the water polo teams from around the country to be soldiers so they can swim in. But other than that, the ground force is irrelevant. So that leaves air power, once again, relying almost exclusively on air power. And as we've seen in Iran, it's got real limitations, and then have more limitations going up against China.
Kennedy's not a young man. Maybe Kennedy personally remembers the Boxer Rebellion and is still living in it.
No. Yeah, I think he's my age, I think.
It's hard to tell with some of these. They just mummify in their congressional seats.
No, that's true. But let me check it out here, because now you've got me thinking.
Some of these Congress critters, at the end of the day, you got to pass a mirror in front of them to see if they're still breathing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we got two new elections coming up. Guy, carry them out feet first.
Okay, yeah. So he's actually 4 years older.
Oh, okay.
So he's born in 51. So, he's still in pretty decent shape for a 74-year-old.
Yeah. It's just the way he's talking, you'd think it's the Boxer Rebellion all over again.
Yeah.
You now, the Marines in, they're just going to march through and shoot the guys.
What I don't understand is the precise moment we had this dramatic shift in the U.S. Understanding of the policy. Because at least through the 1980s and 1990s, it was generally conceded that Taiwan was part of China, not even in question. And it wasn't even a matter of, we're going to support Taiwan to declare independence from China. None of that. But it's only during Barack Obama that this really started becoming a thing for both parties. And, it's downright dangerous because of all the different advantages China now enjoys over the United States, financially and economically. And the United States is having trouble coming to grips with it. We've got like NVIDIA. We keep trying. NVIDIA is basically now closed out of the Chinese market. That is the largest market for computer chips in the world.
Yep.
And now NVIDIA is shut out. Why? U.S. shut out Huawei. So, if you want to, if you're going to have genuine competition, have genuine competition. But we're saying, can't trust Huawei. They use backdoors and spy on us. Well, it's like, what
NVIDIA
the
doesn't?
Well, yeah, what the fuck do you think we're doing? Okay, come on. It's just enough with this delusional deceit. So, so they are in a situation now that China has. They're going whole hog for Huawei. And even, I was listening to the NVIDIA chairman, and he was commenting on the fact that, this AI is going to be a big thing in the United States, except for one little bitty problem. We're going to need 1,000 times the electrical power that we currently have, and we don't have a plan in place to get there.
Wait. 1,000 times the electrical power of the United States or the local area he's in?
Yes, no, 1,000 times what the United States, the total power of the United States.
Holy.
1,000 times more. Yeah.
Where's he complaining on getting that from?
Oh, well, geez, somebody should have thought about that. And they didn't.
Holy
now,
mother.
Whereas China has built so much excess capacity that their price per kilowatt hour is going down, not up. Well, so China, you know, China's going to win the whole AI race, AI battle.
Did you see the photonic chips that the Chinese have brought out?
No.
So these chips are powered by photons, by light, right? Mm-hmm. They're using light to send signals and information. And because they're not electricity, it's light. I mean, it's energy. It's still energy, but
yeah,
it uses up a lot less energy. It's 1,000 times faster. Let that sink in. 1,000 freaking times faster. Their chip design rate is now went from 6 weeks to six months to 2 weeks. That's the speed. They've got a line already set up to manufacture the first 12,000 of them this year. So it's a big wafer, about like that, and it's got the chipsets built into it. And it uses a lot less electricity because it doesn't heat up like that.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's, you know, this is what we're seeing, that on almost every scale you want to use, the Chinese are ahead of the United States. And the United States keeps trying to pick a fight with them, whereas Russia's quite content to say, hey, let's be partners.
Yeah.
We got some stuff you need. You got some stuff we need. That's a good equal partnership. Yeah, the oil and gas that Russia supplies is essential for China. And I'm sure there's some other minerals and food and
aviation. And Russia builds a lot of, you know, China is trying to build its own wide-bodied transportation or passenger transport planes.
Right.
Russia has two medium-range planes that are 100% Russian-built.
Right.
And they're working with China on building a joint project right now. So...
Now, once they do that, China doesn't need Airbus, doesn't need Boeing, can tell the West to go pound sand.
Well, you know where Boeing's main up to 2022, Boeing's main engineering center was?
It was Shanghai?
Moscow. Over 700 engineers. They closed it when the conflict started. Yeah, look it up.
Anybody
doesn't believe me, look it up. Oh, yeah, 700 engineers. They had to close it up. I don't know how many engineers they took with them or moved to the U.S., wherever they moved their offices to. But that, it was all in Moscow.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, most people don't know that about Boeing. And most of the electronics was coming from China.
Right.
So, kind of an American plane.
Kind of. Yeah, this, United States keeps trying to go the isolationist route without having set in place the supply chains to accomplish that.
Yep.
So it's blowing up on us. We haven't seen the full effect yet. The full effect's coming within, I think, the next couple of weeks.
What do you think is going to come? You're talking if Trump starts shooting or regardless?
No. Regardless of whether he starts shooting or not, what you have right now is a complete divorce from reality within the commodity market.
Yeah, I agree.
Because oil, let me just double check this again. Let's see here. Oilprice.com. Yeah, so they're looking at West Texas Intermediate crude at $93. It's down $2.40 or $2.60. And Brent crude is actually up $3 to almost 100. Now, this back when we had COVID in 2020, the barrel price per barrel of oil was up around $150 a barrel. Now, at that time, we didn't have a shortage, an actual shortage of oil. Oil was still being pumped out of the ground. Oil was still on tankers en route to destinations. But nonetheless, $150 a barrel. Well, now we've got a situation where there's actually a 20%, at least a 20% shortfall, if not more. And that there's no oil out on the high seas ready to be offloaded. There's not oil that used to be pumped in Qatar and Saudi Arabia is not being pumped. So what's the price of oil doing? It's falling. That makes absolutely no sense. No sense whatsoever.
Spot market is 116 today. So yeah, it's way.
Yeah, this guy, you got a big divorce between what people are actually having to pay to get it off the boat, as opposed to what they're, you know, paying these future contracts.
Yeah.
So, you know, shrewd traders are making a lot of money off of this.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. is still selling off its strategic reserve.
Mm-hmm.
How much is left? They're selling it to the Europeans.
Which is helping keep the price of oil down.
Right. Well, that's temporary.
Oh, yes, exactly. Because this, despite the upbeat pronostications by Donald Trump, this war with Iran is not coming to an end anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, which, you think Trump is going to start a shooting war, or he's going to leave the blockade of the blockade and just let it?
No, they're going to restart the shooting war. Oh, because remember, one of Iran's key demands was that there'd be a ceasefire in Lebanon, and Israel's now said, "Fuck that! We're going to do whatever we want," which they're doing. So the ceasefire is done. That means the war with Hezbollah is going to ramp up dramatically in the next couple of days. The Hezbollah had already been causing significant damage to the Israeli army with drones. Now that's just going to increase, and Israel's going to go with just trying to bomb the hell out of turn all of Lebanon into Gaza. You know, level every building they can possibly.
Oh, they're destroying the ancient city of Tyre now.
Yeah,
neighborhood by neighborhood, they're wiping out a 5,000-year-old city.
So it's out of that. And then yesterday there was this a skirmish that the U.S. attacked small boats. They claim they're laying mines. These guys are right off the coast of Bandar Abbas. That's not where you lay mines. You don't lay mines in your own water.
Right.
You lay mines where over by Oman, where people could try to avoid having to come through your territorial water. So that was stupid. I think that was a lie. The Iranians shot down MQ-9 Reaper. There went another $35 million in the drink. So we're rapidly approaching, 700. We're approaching about 900 million dollars worth of drones that have been shot down. The Reapers. So
$1 billion here and there.
Among friends. Then they also the U.S. killed four Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps sailors, and Iran reportedly fired back at a U.S. ship with an anti-ship missile. We don't know what happened there. So, you know, that was just yesterday. I understand that today Iran is continuing its attacks on United Arab Emirate infrastructure. So that's underway now as we speak. That's not getting a lot of media coverage at all.
No, it's not. I knew about what you're talking about. I was about to bring it up, but you brought it up. But an ongoing skirmish with infrastructure that wasn't reported yet. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. So, you know, this, I think Trump's just been engaged in more. He's done it every week. I don't know why people still, they keep acting like they're discovering fire for the first time every week. You know, what's that? It's hot. You know, okay. He declares all peace is at hand. We got an agreement. We're going to, man, this thing's going to be closed. War is going to end. Then it doesn't. And then,
psych.
No, okay. Well, maybe next week. Maybe next week. And then, you know, the oil price goes back up and the stocks come back down. And then next week, happy. Oh, we got the peace is at hand. And so oil prices go down and stocks go up. I mean, it's been like this every week, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down.
They say Americans have a attention span of a 30-second commercial, a Coca-Cola commercial. I guess that must be true. They're constantly being shocked by, Trump lied to us again.
Yeah, that's what's remarkable in this is that Trump keeps getting away with it.
Yeah.
And nobody's calling him on it.
Well, hey, it's all about the ballroom.
Oh boy. Yeah, talk about a boondoggle. Well, and then so you got the ballroom, you got his golden statue down at the Doral Golf Course in Miami.
It's blessed. Don't leave it alone. It's blessed. It's anointed by God himself through one of the evangelicals. The Christian Zionist.
And now they're just starting to ship the Trump phone. So, you got all MAGA, you come buy this Trump phone. It's made in America. Well, that was the promise. Well, it actually looks like it's made in Taiwan. And they say on the box, assembled in America, which means they just ship the phone separate from the box. They got some guy in the States that puts it in the box. Boom, assembled here. And it turns out the camera's got limited function, memory's limited. Basically, it's just a piece of shit. And, those poor suckers who bought into this, good. They deserve to get burned.
You've seen the Trump coin?
I've heard of the Trump coin. I didn't ever get close to the Trump coin.
Look up how far it's fallen off its peak. It's down 96%. Yeah. Trump got $30 billion off that Trump coin from fools buying that Trump coin. And then they turned that and used as leverage to get real money. And, yeah. it's now down 96%.
Yeah.
I think that's called a pump and dump.
Yeah, well, and then, it doesn't matter. Any product that Trump's ever attached his name to ends up being shady. And of very questionable value, where there's Trump steaks, Trump wine.
Whatever happened to Trump steaks and Trump wine? I remember that coming out and then disappearing.
They realized that they had a terrible product. You know what? The only product that I think Trump could sell that where the price would match the use is if he did Trump toilet paper. So, yeah, people wiping their ass with it would at least get the satisfaction of, shitting on Trump. Sorry.
Trump wine might be bad, but Trump steaks? I mean, how bad can you make a steak? Unless you're gluing it together from, have you seen that? Where they glue a steak together from, like, little pieces of meat?
Oh, good. No, I couldn't. I like meat too much to watch anything like that.
And apparently this is common practice in a lot of American supermarkets now.
Huh.
So whatever, they cut the steaks, whatever little pieces they have left over, they've got this edible glue. And apparently you can't really taste, it has no taste. And they just glue this back and they press it down. And it looks like a solid piece of meat.
I buy strictly from two local butcher shops. They're both they're local. They're not corporate. So,
yeah, the things you don't want to know about your food.
Yeah, well, there's one that's called Alpine Steakhouse. Oh boy, it is. So it's a German flavor, and the sides and the meat there are just spectacular.
Nice.
And they also make what's called a turducken. Do you know what a turducken is?
Is that where the duck is inside the turkey?
Well, you got a duck, a chicken, I want to say a quail, and a turkey, one inside the other, and they're boned and then they're stuffed and it's the ultimate, one step beyond a heart attack.
Well, I've seen burgers like this big. That was definitely heart attack food. But in the South, though, you get, if you go to the festivals, you get the deep fried. You got deep fried ice cream. Then you got
deep fried anything.
Deep fried bar of butter.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
You were talking about heart attack food right there.
Yeah. Dip it. Dipping in like a cornmeal slurry and dumping into the peanut oil, and good God.
And people are eating it, and it's just you get like a corn dog, except the middle of it is in the hot dog.
Yeah, it's so just butter. Do they have any, I won't call it nasty, but do they have any comparable so-called southern health food there in Russia, like that stuff?
You've got something close to a funnel cake, donuts that are like deep fried like that. I think that's it. I've never seen anything else along those lines. I mean, we've got some dishes that we like that are kind of nasty for other people, like холодец, холодное or cold. You got a base of beef or pork, and then you get pork fat or beef fat, depending on what you, how you're making it. Turn it into, it's liquefied. You throw some spices and stuff in there, and you pour it on top of that, and it just jellifies. And then you
Oh,
can eat
okay.
the whole thing. We eat a lot of pork fat, sala, but that's actually good for you in winter, particularly because it's got lots of vitamin B in it. It gets you a lot of energy when it's cold as hell outside. So, but no, no deep fried candy bars, no deep fried bars of butter. Funnel cakes is about it,
Yeah, so you've had the dual experience
Oh,
with the American junk food and now Russian junk food.
Honestly, I've never eaten deep fried butter. I just look at it and it's like, man, to me, that was just like the most unappetizing thing I ever saw. Like, no,
Well,
I'm just thinking heart attack the moment I look at that.
there's a reason Americans are fatter than your average Russian.
True, very true.
So.
But then again, we don't have any GMO food. It's illegal by law.
Yeah.
That helps a lot. That helps
Hey,
a lot.
so let me ask you this. So my take on the new turn in the war. So we've entered a new dimension. It started. We got the first hint of it. I would two almost 3 weeks ago with Dmitry Polyansky when he told Danny Davis, "Hey, Europe's going to pay a price for this," and then. And 3 days later, Sergei Rybkov, the deputy foreign minister, was out basically saying, Europe keeps attacking us or enabling these attacks are going to be a target. So then the strike that took place, I guess, on Saturday or Sunday in Kyiv was, had a lot of people in the West saying, well, why didn't Russia do this before? And as I started thinking it through, and I said, I think there are two basic reasons. Reason number one is up until now, Russia didn't have a, let's call it a good enough excuse to attack these sites where it had its own intelligence officers inserted into the operation. So as long as you have a Russian intelligence asset on the general staff, a Russian intelligence asset in the middle of the SBU, just go through both the military and intelligence side of Ukraine, I believe that Russia was had this very well covered, which is one reason they said, okay, we're not going to attack those sites because if we do, we run the risk of killing our own asset.
Yeah,
Number
maybe. That's possible.
two, they knew that there were foreigners at those sites, yeah, U.S. and Europeans, NATO Europeans. Russia was not yet ready militarily to. They felt if they hit those, killed the Westerners, there's the possibility the West activating Article 5 and then NATO coming after Russia. And I think the Russians have calculated, we don't have what we need yet. We don't have the full complement of missiles. We don't have the full complement of troops, trained troops, etc. Now they do. And so when they hit those schoolgirls, largely schoolgirls, a few guys,
Yeah, it was 18. It was 18 girls and 3 guys that died.
yeah. So that this now pushed it into a whole new dimension. And in the past, Russia didn't want to run the risk. Okay, if we kill these foreigners, this could escalate the war, and we're not ready to fight now. They're saying, telling they when they told Rubio, tell your people to get the hell out of Kyiv, because it's basically it's open season. The those foreigners that ignore that warning will do so at their own peril, because now I think Russia will be more than willing to kill anybody that's in these control centers and the management centers of these military industrial complexes, of the intelligence units, of the military plant across the board. So this is not going to be just a 24-hour strike and then they're done. I think Russia is looking at, they're going to start a campaign that's going to level key sectors of Kyiv in preparation for a Russian reoccupation and capture of Kyiv.
You see, it's mixed signals, and that's what, you know, I was on Danny's show, and Scott had told him, you know, the decisions are made. I'm telling him, I don't know if they have been made, because there's very mixed signals coming out,
mm-hmm.
and there's still mixed signals.
Yeah.
Look, just today, Andrei Kartopolov said that, and he's head of the he's head of the committee, the defense committee, in the parliament. And he said, you know, we're not going to target Zelensky and we're not going to target the Rada. We're targeting military decision-making points, not the government. I'm like, wait a minute. But the government, and he's a military man. He's an admiral, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, retired admiral. It's like, you're not fighting the military. You're fighting the government. The military is just the tools that are being used between the two government fighting. So we're fighting the government in Ukraine. It's an illegal regime. It's a bloody murderous regime. But we're fighting that regime. Why wouldn't you target the regime? And yeah. As a military person, I, you know, now he's talking about, yeah, we're looking at bombing the bridges on the Dnieper. It's like, well, why haven't we done that 3 years ago? Okay, true that the bridges are built to withstand the nuclear blast and all that, blah, blah, blah. But you can still destroy them. It takes a lot more. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, what about the argument? Because I made this with a Russian general a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what he pointed out was, well, it could be that they didn't want to disrupt the bridges and keep that would have kept a large portion of Ukraine's military force on the west side of the Dnieper. They wanted those bridges open so those forces could come into the eastern region and therefore be in a position where Russia could destroy them more easily.
So, you know, whether or not those bridges exist, if you're talking infantry, they'll still get them across. There's plenty of smaller bridges, pontoon bridges, boats. You can still get the infantry across. But what you can't get across is heavy equipment, particularly Western heavy equipment, which is really heavy equipment. I mean, an Abrams tank is 70 tons, a little over 70 tons, fully fueled and fully armed. So, okay, you're looking at maybe like 67, 68 full tons if you just do the minimum. But, you know, and if you're driving it on a truck bed, look at another 20 tons for that truck. That's a lot of weight. But I mean, if you damage up the bridges enough that even maybe cars can go across, but they can't handle tanks, you've already got problems. You make it more difficult.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I've heard, oh, you know, that way the Ukrainians can retreat, but we're not advancing like that, that they would be forced to retreat like that. Like it or not, but drones do, at the moment at least, they're running. They're making that point. It's hard to maneuver for now. Now, the Chinese are working on or supposedly field testing a microwave EMP meter, electromagnetic pulse meter. And that will, you know, that's not a single service target instrument like a laser or shotgun or anything like that. That's an area effect weapon to just burn out all the electronics. So that could move, you know, if that works. And if we can get those combat tested into Russia, that could open up maneuver warfare again, at least limited maneuver warfare. But, you know, but right now, yes, I don't know, man. I would have, you know, and I'm not just saying me, you know, I know how I was taught, you know, war is logistics, number one.
Yeah.
You take out the tunnels, you take out the bridges, you isolate your enemy from provisions, munitions, and then you take them apart.
Well, in fact, I was just going to say the same thing, that we're at that stage now that if they did that, this would be further strangling the units that are downrange.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, if they can't be resupplied, they can't fight.
Right. You know, it doesn't matter how brave an army you have. If they've got no bullets and no food, The most I guess they can do is a bungee charge. And we don't know how well that worked for the Japanese most of the time. And you know, that's the reality of it. So I don't know, man. When Kartapalov put that out, I was, geez, okay, so we're not targeting the Zelensky regime. I don't know why. And for the people that said that, you know, oh, if you just kill someone, some new ones will come, that's a lie. They don't have an ideology. Their only ideology is to steal everything they can. And and if stealing means you're going to get killed, then I got to stick around.
Right.
You know, they're going to take whatever they've already stolen and go, okay, bye-bye, got it. Time to leave the stage. I mean, that's the people we're dealing with there. So I don't know. I don't know. You think Trump's going to... Well, Trump's got Iran, so I don't know how much Trump is going to continue supplying Ukraine. I mean, it's obviously giving him intel.
Yeah, you mean for which conflict, Ukraine or
for
Iran?
For Ukraine.
You know, I don't think he's paying much attention to Ukraine now. So
anybody else paying attention? CIA?
No, they've all. It's all. I think the attention's all shifted to Iran. That, you know, they're like let the Europeans handle that. We'll ignore it. That they can still use some of our capabilities. So that'll be this warning that you know, tell your people to get out. I'll be curious to see how many from a U.S. standpoint, how many contractors, military intel types were there, or are they starting to bug out? They're clearly not getting what they need on the air defense side. In fact, what was it yesterday? I was speaking with Mario Nafal. You've talked to Mario,
yeah,
haven't you?
About 3-4 times.
Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about the Ukrainian claims about air defense. So I said, okay, let's recognize that since 2023, Ukraine has received about 850. Let's call it 1,000. That's been a little generous, but let's call it 1,000 PAC-3 missiles for the Patriot missile system. Okay, that means with those 1,000 missiles, they're capable of engaging 500 Soviet or Russian missiles or drones. So then you ask the question, how many ballistic and cruise missiles has Russia fired into Ukraine since January of 2025? And the answer is like over 3,700.
Whoops.
So in other words, we've shipped enough Patriots to take out 500 of those 3,700, means that 3,200 missiles got through. There was no air defense to stop them. And yet, every time Ukraine, oh yeah, we shot down 90%. We shot down 90%.
Do you remember that first Patriot system battery, or rather, that got taken out by a Kinjal missile? And apparently, everything was closed in. They fired like 30-something interceptors.
Mm-hmm.
You remember how many flew in different directions?
Yeah. Yeah, and some that don't even get off the ground and explode on the ground. Now, that's why, you know, I'm saying... we're being generous here when we say two, because in some cases, as you pointed out, they're firing dozens, or at least three or four. But when you realize how many missiles and cruise and ballistic missiles that Iran fired against Israel and the U.S., then the further depletion of the Patriot missile battery, where it's no longer effective, it doesn't have anything to shoot with.
Yep. Yep. And then what do you do? I'll tell you what you do. And this is a proven Ukrainian fact. If we take it for what it's worth, they actually had a newspaper where they claimed a grandmother was standing on a roof, I guess getting something out of the attic on the roof, when a Russian missile was flying through, and she knocked it down with a can of pickles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is in the ghost of Kiev, you know, category.
Yeah, what great stuff can we steal from a video game?
Just to even print something like that, you know, and they had photos of her standing with her pickles, you know. It's like, oh my god, oh my god. Yeah, that's a well, did you hear about the attempted mass casualty terrorist attack on Russia?
Yes, no.
So this tanker goes into Ust-Luga to fill up by petroleum products, fill up, and there were mines spotted on the tanker. FSB disarmed it. They said NATO-made mines. Mm-hmm. The tanker had unloaded in Antwerp, where it was told to hold for a day and a half because it's supposed to strike. So while it was in line waiting to unload, obviously, you know, somebody planted mines on it. Now, if it had been filled full of fuel and it exploded, you're talking about 300, 400, 500 casualties. Massive explosion. So the question is, who?
Let me stop you there and ask, would you get a bigger explosion with a half-filled tanker?
I don't know.
Because I'm thinking there'd be more gas built up.
Right.
You know, it's like if you got a full tanker, it's full to the top, you're not going to have a lot of gas.
Right.
And so that the oil itself is not necessarily combustible in the sense of a fuel air explosive.
Well, it wasn't oil. It was kerosene, I think.
Kerosene. Even then, it's still
gasoline.
It's going to burn. Sometimes it's better when you get more of it in a gas estate, and that way it ignites. Right.
But yeah, so this was yesterday. This was yesterday. We're looking at who do you think? I think it's MI6. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. They're the most persistent, and again, England's not doing anything to hide its hand in producing all these new drones and such.
Did they? I guess they feel immunity. I mean, I don't know what.
So far. I think those boys are going to be in for a rude awakening. I've never heard the combination of Dmitry Polyansky, what he said on Danny Davis' show now 3 weeks ago, followed by what Rybkov said, then followed by what Lavrov said and made a point. This is based upon instructions from President Putin. So there is no doubt. This is Putin speaking. The government's saluting, saying, yes, sir, we're falling into line, and off we go. So,
I'll tell you, the people were thrilled when those hits came back. They were very unthrilled the next day that they weren't following hits just as badly.
I think the follow-on hits are going to start, you know, today, tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, the airport that they used, Reshnikon. It's a Soviet airport, so military airport, air base. So you know there's a lot of tunnels underneath.
Right.
They're talking about, you know, that was a NATO headquarters somewhere in there. And the Ukrainians are now saying there were two Reshniks that came in.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's one Reshnik, it's 36 rods. It's 36 rods of God coming down there with plasma envelopes.
Right,
two Russian cannons. That's, you know, that's 72 rods coming in.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's this is a big hit, and the Russians don't make promises like this that they don't fulfill. And when they talk about, you know, you got to get your people out, I think they meant every damn word they said.
It's going to be interesting. They, you know, the one Reshnik that hit in Dnipropetrovsk, the huge Mash Reshnik, that was a 4.6 Richter scale earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
It popped a bunch of the water pipes, the water mains, and so on. Because that's not an earthquake prone area, so they don't.
Yeah. So that just shows you the power of what went off.
I mean, that's what they registered at the edge of the city. It was a 4.6 Richter scale earthquake. Not huge, but I mean, this is one missile. a non-nuclear missile, you know, striking. Macron called up Lukashenko, hadn't talked to him since 22, and was demanding that Lukashenko doesn't put any Arashnik missiles in Belarus.
Yeah. So.
You think they're scared?
Hey, man, I'm gonna have to jump here.
Yeah, yep. No problem.
Our time flies fast.
It does. It's always a pleasure.
Well, let's do it. Let's do it again next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so there's so much happening every day. You know, we could do it daily for the most part with Trump.
We got a lot more to talk about next week.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you everyone for joining. We will
All right,
be back.
Brother. Later.
Yep. Cheers.
Bye, man.